from this tin can with a string straight to your listening device, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. Hey everyone, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor Doug, and it's Friday! What do I love about Friday? First, Joe's mom makes pancakes. Second, it's half-priced brine shrimp down at the Sizzler. But the biggest reason to love Friday? On today's podcast, we welcome, from Afford Anything, Paula Pant. And from LenPenzo.com, Charlie Sheen. I'm just kidding, it's Len Penzo. And finally, from Investopedia and Control Your Cash, it's Greg McFarlane. Think that's all we've got? Well, think again. Because in our FreshBooks FinTech segment, we welcome from Roadie, Jamie Gottlieb. And here he is, the guy who was once a roadie for a country music artist, Joe Saul Sehi.
I wasn't so much a roadie as I was the Late Show guy. I showed up because the guy that I was renting speakers from was working the sound, and he said, hey, do you want to play the Light Show? And I said, absolutely. So I hung out and took care of the lights. And it was amazing to me that the band and this one-hit wonder country star, I can't even tell you his name because I have no idea, don't remember what it was, who it was, but I ended up rocking on the lights, and it was amazing that they just kept playing. Even when, you know, I would try to do these dramatic things on the lights, it just, they acted like, hey, it's all just part of the show, man. Hey, everybody, I'm Joe Saul Sehi, Average Joe Money on Twitter, and we've got a fantastic Friday, Late Show not included on today's show, but you know what is included? Included is this pass, StackyBenjamins.com/SoFi, that's spelled S-O-F-I, because you're going to get $100 if you use our link to reach SoFi.com. Here's why you want to go to SoFi. If you've got those student loans hanging out over your head and you're not sure what to do with them, well, guess what? SoFi is the leader in marketplace lending, and they will help you take care of everything related to those student loans. So refinancing the student loans, they have attractive, not just interest rates, but also different times that you can pick from. So if you'd rather get them paid off quickly or stretch those babies out, SoFi is the place to go. StackyBenjamins.com/SOFI. By the way, if you're doing the same thing with your personal loans, you can also use SoFi for that. And you can, third, use them for mortgages. So StackyBenjamins.com/SOFI. No $100 if you use our link for the mortgages, but for the other two, game on. And I'll show you where to verify that SoFi is number one. Head to StackyBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney, because at Magnify Money, you'll find that that checking account you've been using is absolutely horrible. And that savings account that's paying nothing, their savings account's still paying kind of close to nothing, but actually way, way, way better than that savings account that you have. And how about those debt products, you know, the consolidation loan, places like SoFi, places that you probably hadn't heard of before you listened to Stacky Benjamins. Well, guess what? They are right at the top of the list at Magnify Money. So head to StackyBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney. That link tells them that we sent you. And Nick, Brian, and the team over there have created a great spot for you to be able to compare, ditch, switch, and save on your personal financial tools. And so this is cool. I've just pulled up Magnify Money while I was talking. And best interest rate on a savings account is 1.15 right now. But what's interesting is that through Poplar Direct, but the team at Magnify Money says that the fine print is way too complex. You can get 1.1 from Salem 5 Direct, and they give it a B. Plus, minimum balance at Poplar Direct is $5,000 for the minimum balance needed at Salem 5 Direct is $100. So see how quickly I did that? Just very quickly looked at many, many different choices. In fact, now there's quite a few more that are at 1% or above. StackyBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney. All right, we got a fantastic show. I'm so excited about our FreshBooks FinTech segment today. FreshBooks helps us bring to you the finest companies in FinTech. This is a company you want to make a little extra money while you're doing your road trip across the nation, or maybe just across town, or you've got stuff that you need moved and you don't want to pay that huge cost of hiring movers. Well, this company's disrupting in that space. They're called Roadie. Jamie Gottlieb from Roadie is coming down to the basement. But first, we have a fantastic roundtable team. So let's get this party started, huh? let's walk across the basement here and dust off the shortwave, do our Friday normal roundup here. And guess what? After a week of having our listeners on the show, we have our normal contributors back. I think let's start off in Las Vegas, Nevada, where I think that Paula Pant from Afford Anything is holding down the fort.
I'm not sure anyone's ever described me as normal before, Joe.
I meant normal contributor, not that you're normal.
I just think that that is an adjective that has never been associated with me before. So I am proud that in this new year, I can be described in a new way.
Add a new description to your list of many, many descriptions on Paula Pant.
I'll add it to my business card.
Right.
As well as every social media profile. Quote, yes. Normal, says Joe.
Right. Said Joe. One time only. Right. Let's head out to the islands of Hawaii, where I think I can hear the wind blowing and the breeze and maybe a couple birds. Greg McFarland from Control Your Cash and Investopedia. How are you, man?
Wonderful. Thank you. Of course, Paula's normal. As far as I know, she's never eaten a reptile.
That is true. I tend to avoid eating reptiles or amphibians.
Yeah, you I could say that for everyone.
Should that sentence be reptiles and amphibians? I think that's what I meant. See, I am not so so abnormal that I edit my sentences after I speak them.
Greg, we missed you on the eight ball. However, you had asked the question of the eight ball, and I had to bring this up. You asked the question of the eight ball, would Marissa Mayer last the year? And our close Facebook group, The Green Room, exploded when on January 9th, the eight ball missed it by 9 days, Greg. Missed it by nine freaking days.
I'm sure there are plenty of other tech companies for her to run into the ground.
That's right. And speaking of running it into the ground, the guy who's always running into the ground with another stack of gold, it's from Lenpenzo.com, the one and only Lenpenzo.
Joe, how are you?
I'm good. Are you running to the ground with another stack of gold?
As always, I always start the new year off with at least a coin's worth, 1 ounce. Just add it to the collection. Hey, you know what? I was happy to learn. Did you know Prince, my fellow Prince, the artist formerly known as Prince, the man was a gold collector.
He had a ton of it.
670 ounces.
It's amazing.
It is amazing. He had zero stocks, zero bonds, and 670 ounces of gold.
Yeah, and zero wills. Which might have been
that's
a problem.
That's true. That is true. Yeah.
Zero estate documents, right.
But it's really interesting. I mean, if you looked at his list of stuff, I mean, did you see all the stuff he had? I mean, the guy, Greg, did you see his list of cars?
No, I did not.
He had 11 cars, and really, aside from the Bentley, and I think he had a nice Beamer, everything else was like really just average. You know, car like, you know, you or me or most people would have in our driveway.
A 93 Hyundai.
Things I don't drive a Bentley.
Oh, well, maybe you do. I didn't see it last time I was at your place there out there, Greg. So,
wait a minute. Len, did you say 670 ounces of gold?
Yeah.
I'm running that through a currency converter right now, and that's only 787,000 U.S. dollars worth of if you were to convert that.
That's correct. But
Prince, that's not that much.
Yeah, that's kind of it depends on what his net worth was. I mean, it was only 2% of his net worth. So, yeah, that's kind of low. I think even Joe would say that's borderline low for insuring your assets.
We all say like 5%, so he's only halfway there. You're right, Paula. That's funny. Guys, let's dive into these because we got maybe the biggest article we've ever had on here. We're going to talk about the Supreme Court today. How's that for heavy? This comes from the 538 blog. It says, in today's Supreme Court case, and by the way, this is from January 10th, freedom of speech meets your wallet. And I wanted to get all of your thoughts on this before the Supreme Court weighs in, because who cares what they say? If the Stacking Benjamins team says something, I think that's the way it should go. Every time we buy something with our credit cards, says the writer of this article, Amelia Thompson DeVoe, whether at a high-end restaurant or local bodega, merchants pay a percentage of the transaction to companies like Visa or MasterCard. These swipe fees are the subject of a long simmering feud between the retailers, which have profit margins to protect, and credit card companies, which say the fees are just the invisible cost of doing business. So here's what's going down. In many states, companies are not allowed to add a swipe fee, which is like a $2 surcharge on top of the cost of the item so that they can cover the cost of the merchant swipe. On the other hand, they are allowed to offer discounts, which are of the same amount. And now this court case says that I think what this says is that you just have to have one price for everything. Is it, Paula, am I reading that right? Is that what this is saying?
Well, it's a little bit complex because in certain places, and it's state by state, in certain places, merchants cannot impose a surcharge, but they can offer a discount. Whereas in other places, everything has to be one price.
Isn't it funny, Greg, that really a surcharge and a discount really ends up being the same amount of your money out of your wallet? So does it really matter? Do we need any of these laws?
Thank God we have elected officials and bureaucrats around to protect us from ourselves, which has now reached the point where charging someone $30 to pay cash, but $32 to use a credit card is legal, but using inappropriate nomenclature to define the process is not legal. Now, this is in New York, where they prosecute you for asking a cop where you can safely store your out-of-state gun, where shooting yourself in the leg at a nightclub results in a prison term, where selling a quart-sized serving of soda is a subject of civic concern. And this is not hyperbole. Calling the $2 increase a surcharge, they say the argument for it, it's wrong because it might contain other fees not related to the fees imposed by credit card issuers. So it's not enough in New York and these other states for a consumer to make the decision to pay with a credit card and forego a couple bucks. Nope, the consumer needs to be protected from herself.
Let's say that there is a surcharge and the surcharge is X amount of money. It seems like wouldn't I, Greg, know that ahead of time? Like if you give me the bill, if the bill's, let's say, $35, and then you say, well, the bill that you're charging me is $40. I'm like, well, what the heck's going on there? Is that tax? Is that? No, there's a $3 surcharge added. I know it ahead of time. So does the surcharge really matter if I'm going to buy it or not?
Funny you should mention that. And I actually have a real world example of this from a couple days ago on a much, much smaller scale. Now, here's the story. I went to my local grocer here in Maui. And a few years ago, the dolts on the county commission passed a law prohibiting the use of disposable plastic grocery bags. As I've said before, these laws are passed by people who have never owned a pet. So every time I fly from Vegas to Maui, I have to pack dozens of Walmart bags that I have amassed over the previous months just to handle the cat litter. I am not going to carry a permanent cloth bag like some dirty hippie. And I leave it to the listeners to imagine how inconvenient and gross it is to dispose of cat litter in a paper grocery bag. Now, where I was going with this, I usually take a backpack to the grocery store for reasons just outlined. Now, the baggers are pretty slow, so usually I just take the checked groceries and put them in the backpack myself. Sometimes the bagger has filled up a couple of paper bags in the meantime, so I put those in my backpack too. Well, the other day, I just happened to put all the groceries in the backpack without using any paper bags. Later on, I look at my receipt, and I saw that I received a 5-cent credit for not using any paper bags. Now, no one told me about this. It's not listed anywhere in the store. There are signs telling me not to smoke and that pets aren't allowed, but nothing about the 5-cent charge for paper bags. Or, if you prefer, a 5-cent reward for not using paper bags. Now, I ask you, do I have a class action lawsuit on my hands? I'm only finding out about this 5-cent deal after the fact. And of course, I never would have found out about it if I kept using at least one paper bag on every visit.
You could have had 85 cents by now in your pocket. I think that is a class action lawsuit.
I'm furious about this in a very, very small way.
Yeah. That's amazing. Len, is there any difference between a discount and a surcharge?
Well, they're totally opposite. They're on opposite ends of the coin, but it's how they're applied, right?
Yeah, a discount for cash versus a surcharge because that's what this really is getting down to. Can companies offer a discount for cash versus saying there's a surcharge for credit?
Yeah, I mean, it's really, to me, it's crazy. We're arguing over, you know, how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. To me, the bottom line, I think we've all kind of mentioned this in one way or another, is the final price. What's the final price? This really, what this comes down to is certain people think that the rest of us can't think for ourselves and make smart decisions. If you look at the arguments made by the people who are trying to ban, you know, or trying to mandate how you are going to say, advertise this pricing, what they're saying is some people don't know what they're getting. They can't figure it out for themselves. And so therefore, we have to tightly regulate how something is priced. And it's just a matter of control. And really it just comes down to the bottom line. What is the bottom line price? I mean, think about growth. Think there's a lot of things we buy or that we agree to pay for, but we don't know the final price right now until we get the bill. A lot of that, for example, hotels. You go to a hotel, right. You pay the, you, oh, it's $160 right. a night. Well, then you get the final bill. Oh, yeah, but there was, you know, you got city tax, county tax, you got all these other taxes, and it's that $160 a night turned out to be $190 a night. Same thing for airline tickets. They advertise one price for the airline ticket, and then before you know it, you got the fees tacked on there too. So to me, this is just control. It's just a matter of control that the people think we can't think for ourselves.
But the crux of this argument, though, Len, is that people don't make good decisions on their own. And the whole thing about this, which I find fascinating, is behavioral economics. And they talk about Richard Thaler in this article about how the impact of credit card surcharges is that people would rather, and I'm looking for the quote.
People would rather not lose money than save money.
Yes, exactly. Right. And so just to show, it says, to show the justices how the theory works, that there were some colleagues at Harvard who devised an experiment to test a recent law and included it in a briefing. They assigned 820 participants to two groups, a surcharge and a discount group, and gave each a scenario to read. The surcharge group received a scenario in which they could pay $130 for food at a convenience store, but only if they paid cash. The price would be $133.90 if they pay with credit. The discount group had the opposite scenario. The groceries add up to $133.90, but they could pay $130 if they use cash. Most of the respondents in both groups opted for cash, but only 11% of the surcharge group said they'd use credit, compared with 18% discount group. So more of the discount group said that they would use credit if the cash option didn't exist. We make different decisions based on whether we're getting a discount or if there's a surcharge.
Yeah, but if you think about it, it's kind of subliminal. It's subliminal how the decisions are made. But does it really matter? I mean, you can't legislate behavior. You just can't. And there's plenty of proof. There's all kinds of examples of how you can't. Speeding's against the law. People speed anyways, you know? So why don't we just let the free market reign and let the chips fall where they may and just be done with it?
Paula, it's funny because, you know, part of this article says that a finance professor at Mississippi State University said that people rarely cover enough cash to cover their purchases. So if you offer them a discount, that actually encourages people to carry cash and makes, you know, the effect of credit card debt much less in America. Do you agree with that?
It may or it may not, but I think that that's irrelevant to the argument. I think that the crux of this argument is that you are legislating the words that a business can use when it's describing the action that it's taking, when it's describing its pricing model. Because ultimately, the merchant sets the price of the product. And so the merchant's internal calculus is going to take all of these factors, their cost of doing business. The merchant's going to take all of that into account when they're deciding how much they want to price that product at. And so by legislating what they're allowed to call it or how they're allowed to frame it, you have to frame it as a surcharge versus you have to frame it as a discount. All you're doing is just legislating words. You know, it's just a matter of semantics. At the end of the day, the merchant is going to price the product at the price that makes the most sense for the merchant.
Well, maybe, but let's take a look at that. So in Texarkana, we don't have an Apple store. So Apple has a deal with our local Best Buy. It's the only place where you can buy like a MacBook, iPad. I mean, you can buy the phones at a place where you get any phone, you know, a Verizon, AT&T, whatever. But most Apple products you can only buy at Best Buy. And Best Buy, I know, and you know, isn't allowed to set the price on that product. That product's dictated to them by Apple if they want to keep that agreement in place. So in this case, the retailer doesn't have the ability to say that it's a discount. If they want to reclaim that charge, they have to make it a surcharge, which would be illegal.
Ah, well, in that case, it's even more important to give the merchant the authority to add a surcharge if that is what they choose to do. Again, because that just gives the merchant the authority to bake its operating costs into its pricing model. And so essentially it gives the merchant the ability to operate in a freer fashion. Now, it is true, like to the earlier discussion that we were having, yeah, it is true that this quirk of behavioral economics is that people are more guided by loss aversion than they are by, you know, the opportunity for gain. And that's great and that's fascinating, but that is almost a an afterthought to the fundamental question, which is, do businesses have the right to price products in a way that makes sense to them?
Greg, do you buy into this argument that if retailers left to their own devices, that they will, you know, tack a bunch of other crap onto the surcharge on top of the fee, calling it all retailer fee when it really isn't? They're just lying? Or do you think that the free market takes care of that?
I think that I don't see how the two are mutually exclusive. I think absolutely the merchant can tack on additional fees and then blame it on the credit card company. But what do I care? I mean, I can either buy the product for the set price or not. But getting into semantic arguments about, it's like, Paula, no offense, but I think every guy on the planet can understand some variation of this. Honey, how much did that cost? Oh, I got it on sale. It's not what I asked you. No, it was 40% off. In fact, there was a guy, there really was a class action lawsuit in California a few years ago. He went into a Target and bought a sweater for $25. You figure, okay, he's happy, they're happy. But no, later on, he said he bought it because he said they had discounted it by a certain amount, 30% or whatever. And it turns out they didn't. And therefore, that was fraudulent.
Oh, the discount was only 25% or some other number?
Yeah, or they never discounted it in the first place. So it's not enough that he found a sweater at a price that he liked. He had to know that he was getting a good deal from whatever the original retail price was. And I think he ended up winning.
Hey, is this like the guy in Chicago who's suing McDonald's right now because the extra value meal is 41 cents more than if you bought the items separately?
Really? Is it really?
I'm serious. It's a heart attack. At least the one in Chicago, with some suburb of Chicago that he was in. Yeah, 41. He bought the cheeseburger Happy Meal, and then he got home or whenever. He did the math, and he said, hey, wait a minute. You know, if I'd have bought these items separately, I'd have saved 41 cents.
Yeah,
but I'm serious. It made the news.
I don't know, man. Let him kind of with that guy. Sounds like the extra extra screwage meal to me.
It is. No, it is. Hey, good for the guy. Yeah, it's false advertising. Yeah.
Right. He ate at McDonald's and he got screwed.
Yeah, see, I thought he was going to sue for indigestion, but you know, he has a better case with the, so.
Yeah, that's so many jokes.
I'm sorry. It was Kohl's, not Target. It was the semi-annual suit event. Antonio Hinojos, he bought, and it wasn't a sweater and it wasn't $25. It was Samsonite luggage for $150. They claim they marked the price down from $300. He asserts that the luggage had never been available at $300.
I love that when they say that, you know, the suggested retail price that they've never offered ever was X. So
yeah.
Yeah. So they mark it up before they mark it down. I love that. But Paula, to your point, companies should be free to do that. I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's just framing, you know, and the merchant can frame the price in whatever way the merchant wants to do it. Because at the end of the day, like all of this talk about a price being quote unquote inflated is, I think that talk itself is inflated and not grounded in any reality. At the end of the day, a person buys a product if that product or service is priced at a level that is competitive and that makes sense to them. So if there is a sandwich shop down the street that sells sandwiches for $5 a sandwich, and then there's another one two blocks away that sells sandwiches for $5 plus additional surcharges that add that thing up to $7. I mean, I'm going to make an informed decision as to whether I want the $5 or the $7 sandwich, depending on cost, convenience, taste, and all of the other factors that I use when I'm making that decision.
Including the fact that we just hate surcharges. Like every time I see a surcharge, I'm like, what the hell is that?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, there's no way that a price could be quote unquote inflated because the price is simply what the seller and the buyer agree to meet at.
I'll be interested to see what happens when they actually come out with their ruling, and we'll follow up on that. All right, going to take a quick break for our FreshBooks FinTech segment here in the middle of the show. If you're brand new to the show, our Fridays, because OG's not here with us, works a little differently. We have our roundtable, and halfway through, we introduce you to a new company, none of which we endorse. I just like showing you all the cool things going on in financially related companies. We call them FinTech. Some are insurance tech. Some are ways to help you save money. Some are coupon companies. We're all over the place with our FreshBooks FinTech segment. But before we even get into that, one FinTech company that I love is FreshBooks, because if you're racing around the clock to wrap up you know, five different projects, you're prepping for a meeting later in the afternoon, and you're trying to tackle them out in a paperwork, well, guess what? Welcome to Life as a Freelancer, right? I know that very well. Challenging? Yes, but our friends at FreshBooks believe the rewards are so worth it because the working world's changed. While the growth of the internet has shown there's never been more opportunities for self-employed people, FreshBooks has helped meet that need and is excited to announce their launch of an all-new version of their cloud accounting software. How does it work? Well, it's been redesigned from the ground up and custom built for exactly the way that you work. Get ready for the simplest way to be more productive, organized, and most importantly, get paid quickly. We've been using FreshBooks at Stacking Benjamins, and I have to say, it's so easy to create and send professional-looking invoices. It says here that it takes 30 seconds. I'm not kidding. It's quicker than 30 seconds. You can set up online payments with just a couple clicks and get paid up to 4 days faster. If you work for yourself, you know how important that is. See when your client's seen your invoice and put an end to their guessing game. And guess what? There is no downside to checking it out and finding out that, you know what? I'm right. And you're going to like FreshBooks better, much like we did. Here's what you do. You go to stackybenjamins.com/FreshBooks. stackybenjamins.com/FreshBooks. That takes you to the Stacking Benjamins link. Then all you have to do is enter the word Stacking Benjamins in how did you hear about us? And you know what that means? You're going to get a 30-day unrestricted free trial because you listen to the show. How awesome is that? It's funny because there's all of this innovation that could happen. And I love how FreshBooks is all about innovation and about this segment because FreshBooks is one of those innovators who've stepped up to provide new solutions for freelancers and small business owners as things change very rapidly. I mean, you look at accounting services that need to adapt and be replaced because retirement plans are changing, employment insurance changing, banks are changing, all that's changing. So stackybenjamins.com/FreshBooks. All right, let's get into it. Jamie Gottlieb is with Rhody, and I just can't wait for you to hear about this because I didn't think a company like this existed. Jamie Gottlieb coming down to the basement. And Jamie Gottlieb from Rhody joins us. Have a seat, Jamie. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Joe. Thanks so much for having me. It's great to see you.
Well, it's funny, this space where you guys are innovating in, when I first heard about your company, I was surprised and I thought, I can't believe somebody hasn't thought of this before. Do you guys get that reaction a lot?
We do seem to get that reaction, but mostly it's more like, wow, you're making my life a whole lot easier, or even like, you're paying me to drive somewhere I'm already going. I can't believe it. So we definitely get that from time to time.
Well, now I'm putting the cart before the horse, Jamie, because most people listening have no idea what it is you do. Tell me how Rhody was created. Was it you guys were having issues on your own, getting stuff from point A to point B, and you thought there's got to be a better way? Or how can we make money if I'm already going someplace? How did it all start?
Sure thing. So for your listeners who don't know what Rhody is or who we are, Rhody is the first on-the-way delivery network. So we connect people who have stuff to send with drivers already heading in the right direction. So whether you need to send clothes or couches, patio furniture, even pets, we connect you with a driver already heading that way that can deliver it door-to-door for you. Now, the backstory behind Rhody is, I think it's a pretty funny one. Our founder, Mark Gorlin, was halfway through a bathroom tile repair at his family's place in Perdido Keys, Florida. And so he was driving down there from Atlanta and stopped for a little bit in Birmingham to do some fishing for the weekend. And that's when he got a call from Glenn, the tile guy, saying that his tile had been completely smashed to bits. They would have to order an entirely new box and that all the work on the repair had to be paused until they got the new tile. Now, this was on a Thursday. The tile, there was no way it was going to get there before Monday. So all the work had to completely stop. And so Mark was sitting, on the side of the road. He's pulled over to take the call. And he was looking at all the cars on I-65 going north and all of them going south. And he figured there had to be someone coming that way anyway, going down to Perdido Keys, Florida, who could pick up the tile and, deliver it door to door. And, he'd even make it worth their while and pay him a little bit for making the drive down there. And so that's kind of when the whole idea sparked, you could say, that there are patterns and places we go every day. And what if you could tap into that, use extra space and cars already on the road to get things from A to B and help your neighbor out and get paid along the way.
I love stories like that that are just born out of the founder's frustration. That is so that's so awesome. So let me get this straight. I live in Texas now. A lot of my family and my friends, they're in Detroit. So a couple times a year, I will drive from Texarkana all the way up to Detroit, about 900 miles. I can make a little money on that trip that maybe covers some of my expenses getting there by just hauling people's stuff.
Exactly. And it's actually funny you mentioned Detroit because we just had this amazing story. Lauren and her husband had recently moved into a new apartment in Springfield, Illinois from Detroit. She was on a budget. She needed new furniture, more furniture. And her cousin in Detroit said, you know what? You can have my couch. It was this great old leather couch. But the only catch was that Lauren had to find a way to get it from Detroit to Illinois. And, you know, shipping a couch with the traditional shipping company would cost her anywhere from $300, $500. With Rhody, she posted a gig and within the week, someone delivered it door to door. And the best part was that it only cost her $183.
Wow. Way less than a traditional shipping company would cost.
Completely way less. And, you know, it's not just sending big things across the country. It's even sending small things across town as well. And that's what we're doing with our new partnership with Goodwill, where we are offering free local pickup and delivery on all your Goodwill donations. So if you've been meaning to clean out your closet, you just schedule a free pickup on Rhody.com or on our app. And someone already heading that way will pick it up and deliver it for you door to door and even get you a receipt for it as well.
Let's talk about the nuts and bolts of how Rhody works, Jamie. So what do I do? Do I first download the app? Do I go to a website? What do I do?
If you're a sender on Rhody and need to send something, you can post a gig, which is what we call a delivery, on our website at Rhody.com or by downloading the app. You just search Rhody on the iTunes or Android Google Play stores. And it's a free app to download. And what you'll do if you're sending something, you'll take a picture, post it on Rhody, and a driver already heading that way will start offering. And then you get to personally select the driver. And then once you do that, you know, you're in constant communication with them and you can even track your stuff in real time as it goes from point A to point B. As a driver, it's super easy to sign up as well. And you can make anywhere from $8 to $50 on drives you're already taking locally and up to $650 on the more long distance gigs.
If I'm a driver, is there a, you know, a selection process or do I fill out all kinds of stuff about my car? How does that work?
Yeah, so similar to other sharing economy companies, we just ask for a valid driver's license, car insurance, bank account information so we can pay you via direct deposit, yeah. A super easy process. And then we actually have no minimum vehicle requirements except for that insurance. So, you know, you can, if you have a sedan, you can take gigs. If you have a pickup truck, you can take gigs and make money with a car that you're already driving.
Speaking of insurance, I'm sure you guys get this question all the time. These big delivery companies partly cost more, Jamie, because they have that insurance that if my stuff gets dented or scratched on the way, that's all covered. How does that work with Rhody if, you know, my buddy Bill doesn't deliver it the way I wanted?
Yeah, so we actually provide up to $500 in insurance completely for free on every gig. And we actually, with our partners at UPS Capital, senders have the option to purchase additional coverage up to $10,000 to cover their stuff and to give them a little more peace of mind. But really, what's great about Rhody is, you know, you don't have your stuff bouncing from truck to truck, right, airplane to airplane. Someone is hand delivering it, safely placing it in their car and delivering it for you door to door.
That's funny because I was thinking about if I'm taking somebody's stuff to defray the cost of me getting to Detroit, you know, for the holidays or whatever, I totally see myself just being like kid fingers with that. You know, I want to make sure it gets there. I think there's a little bit of that versus the person that just is chucking stuff in the back of a truck.
I mean, you're completely right. I mean, it really is about people for us, and people helping people is at the core of what we do. So, you know, you may be helping a neighbor get a table down to their grandmother from New York to Philadelphia, but really you're helping your neighbor out and getting paid along the way. And, you know, that's what we're trying to do with Goodwill as well, is continue that core of who we are in helping people and letting people clean out their closets, but also donating items and giving back to their community at the same time.
Last question I have for you is about how you guys get paid, because we ask that of every company. I'm assuming part of that fee that somebody pays for the delivery, you pay part of that to the driver, but then keep that. Are there any other ways you get paid?
No, that's it. So we take about 20%. So the drivers keep 80% of what they get paid. And whatever you see on the map is what you'll get paid as a driver. So if it says on the map that this gig is worth $350 or this gig is worth $30, you keep all of that money.
Awesome. And so to get it, you go to roadie.com or download the Roadie app at the App Store or on Google Play. Did I get that right?
You did get that right, yeah. And if you want more information about our Goodwill partnership as well, you can visit roadie.com/goodwill, but roadie.com and the App Store is where all the magic happens.
Great time of year for that, where everybody's thinking about their taxes. Thanks for hanging out, Jamie.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. It's great to see you.
Like I said, we don't endorse any of these companies. Frankly, we don't know enough about any of them before we interview them. So we're getting just the word from the horse's mouth about what they're about. But on first glance, isn't that cool? The next time I'm headed to Detroit, I am totally firing up Roadie. In fact, right after our interview, I went and signed up to be a driver. Nothing I like better than a road trip, and why not have the road trip pay for itself? All right, let's get back to our awesome conversation with Len, Greg, and Paula. Let's move to a Business Insider article. This one is written by Ben Mashinsky. It says, this Goldman Sachs chart sums up the global fallout from the 2008 financial crisis. It seems that after even 9 years, we're all still feeling the effects of the 2008 financial crisis. Peter Oppenheimer, chief global strategist at Goldman Sachs, has this single chart that I'll link to in the show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. Shows how this disconnect between the real and financial worlds has worked. And basically, Len, what it shows is that the stock markets have gone up, the bond markets have gone up, even I got gold on here going up. But then you look at the real economy, wages, consumer price index, housing prices index, commodities, those have either gone down or they've risen only a little. So what's the disconnect? The stock market over the last 8 years has gone from 6,500, what the Dow from 6,500 over 20,000. To, you know, real economic prices have done nothing.
Well, if you ask me, and people who, you know me will know what I'm going to tell you. The reason that asset prices are so much higher and the real economy is sucking is because the Fed has printed $4 trillion in the last since 2009. Where's that money going? It's going into all those equities. It's going into the S&P. It's going into bonds, which has lowered the interest rates. Meanwhile, that's doing nothing to help wages, and that's doing nothing to help us in the here on Main Street. So it's really a flood of freshly printed money that's causing that those asset prices. Now, there's one thing on this list, this real economy prices, that's a little misleading. It shows the house prices. It shows it basically almost flat.
Right.
But you've got to remember the chart is from 2009 when everything was peaked. So all that this chart is saying now is we're actually above
the peak
in house prices. The 2009, what it was the last time. So even those have gone back up. And again, I relate that to all this freshly printed money and easy credit.
But do you think, Greg, the other side of that argument is also that people could keep loans? And obviously the economy is built, our economy in the U.S. is definitely built on people continuing to take out loans. And because those are at a low interest rate, that's kept the economy humming along.
Temporarily, it's borrowing prosperity. I miss the magic eight ball, but I'd be willing to put this down here right now. The stock market will get to 10,000 before it gets to 30,000.
Of course,
that might not happen this year, but I'm saying in that band, it will hit the bottom before it hits the top.
So you think there's another shoe that's going to drop here because of things like this chart?
I think it's way overpriced. Amazon was at 170 times earnings last I checked, comparable to where it was in 1999, when it ended up losing like 96% of its value. Now, of course, that's just one company and Amazon's not going anywhere by virtue of being well capitalized and finally starting to turn a profit once in a while. Institutional investors and bondholders might love it, but I wouldn't touch it as an individual investor. But people get so fixated that they're excited about Dow 20,000 to the point that last week, when the Dow was hovering around 19,980 near the closing bell, Fox Business Network devoted the entire screen to the ticker while the talking heads were talking with no heads visible. The really tragic thing about that is that this happened during Liz Claman's shift.
Paul, I hate even bringing you into this because the next obvious question that I can't ask you is, so Paula, if you agree with Greg, you know, what do you do about this? And I already flip and know your answer and it's kind of annoying.
Exactly. Exactly. So what other question do you want to ask me, Joe?
I don't know. Well, looking at this data, doesn't it look to you like there's another shoe that just has to drop? You think Greg's right?
Well, I am concerned about the fact that the stock market as a whole is trading at a PE of 23 right now, which is historically quite a bit higher than, it's higher than it ought to be. And it's also true that we've been printing money for a very long time and we've been hitting lots of new highs that don't necessarily have the earnings behind them. Yes, all of those things are true. That being said, things could continue. The bull could keep running for another 2, 3, 4, 5 years. That's always possible. It's also true that at least 50%, if not more, of America's large cap companies do a substantial amount of their business overseas. And so wage growth in other countries, and I'm not just talking about Europe, I'm talking about the rest of the world, could translate into higher consumer spending, which could keep those companies afloat. I mean, I think that the article that we're looking at and this chart that we're looking at is too narrow of a sliver at too small of a point in time. And it seems to be designed purely for the sake of fueling people's confirmation biases.
The confirmation biases that we think there's another shoe that needs to drop.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, if you look at this, though, I mean, you're talking about the rest of the world, the fourth over, and I know people listening can't see this, but is actually the world index. It's not the EU. And that's pretty high, too.
Right. Yes. But the world index is number one. It tends to be very highly skewed by its largest cap players, by its biggest players. And again, number two, and I think this is probably the bigger point, is that just because there is this gap right now, we don't know if that means the shoe is going to fall. There's going to be another recession at some point, but is that shoe going to fall in 2017 or is it going to happen in 2020? We don't know that.
Yeah, we don't know when that's going to happen. I think that's a good place to leave it, guys, because I'm looking at the clock and we spent a lot of time on article number one. So I think we're going to leave it right there. Paula, let's stick with you. So let's talk about what's going on at your place of business, Afford Anything. Seems like the podcast is rocking in 2017. What's going on at Afford Anything?
The podcast is doing really, really well. I've got a 2-part interview series with a guy by the name of Andrew Hallam, who became a millionaire on a school teacher salary. And so in this 2-part interview, he talks exactly about how he did that and his investing philosophies that got him to millionairedom despite his modest earnings. And I mentioned previously on the show that there would be an interview with AJ Jacobs. That's still happening, but it's a little delayed. So we're pushing that one a little further down the ballpark, but that will be coming up at some point in the next to-be-determined time period.
TBD, right. Awesome. Greg, so are you going to write a piece about how you made a bajillion dollars off of that big Investopedia money?
Actually, I am busy putting together this class action suit now. I am auditioning attorneys. That's going to take up most of my time for the next week.
Sorry, that's going to cramp your style for a while. Although, I'll bet with that type of money, you think about the number of attorneys that are after that. That's going to be a ton of attorneys. Good luck with those guys.
Thank you.
Yeah. Len, how about you? What's going on at the crazily titled LenPenzo.com.
I know, isn't it? Isn't it amazing? It always gets me. How the heck do people even get to my site in the first place? I don't even know how it happened. LenPenzo.com. How do you even get to there? How do you even get to that point? Anyways, 7 most popular ways to commit financial suicide. It's hot right now over at LenPenzo.com. So come on over and check it out.
I love it. The most popular ways. So if you're contemplating financial suicide, check this out.
Exactly. And you know what? Amazingly, one of the 7 that's not on there is buying a whole bunch of gold and building a backyard bunker and hiding out in it.
Did you say that's not on there?
It's not on there. Amazing.
That's right. Shock. Hashtag shock. Right. All right, guys. Thanks for playing.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Oh, and there it is, everybody. And that's going to lock down this week. Well, almost lock it down, except for our Friday game. And for those of you new to Stacking Benjamins on Friday, because OG's not here, we play a game on these segments. And normally the game is played in a very cryptic manner, but this particular game, I'm giving you the clues one at a time. And then, Anybody who writes me with the correct answer on the same day as the first correct answer, those people are going to all be entered into a drawing to see who gets it. And we have a prize pack that I'll put together specifically for you. In fact, we've had some fun with our prize packs lately. So, and if I'm gonna add this, sorry, Dan, and recent winners, but if you've won in the last 6 months, you're not eligible to win again. So that's coming up in just a second, but not before I point out that what a fantastic way to go into your weekend by getting those student loans taken care of. Head to StackyBenjamins.com/SOFI. To take care of your student loans. By take care of them, I mean consolidate, because if those student loans are hanging over your head, you're struggling with the payments, why not reduce the amount of money that you're paying out to the man, and instead more money goes toward the payoff? And you can stretch them out for a longer period of time at a lower interest rate. You can tighten it up. You know what I like to do? I like to put as much money towards student loans as possible, but I also like to have the freedom to do that myself. But the cool thing is, with SoFi, you have the flexibility to do either, and the interest rates are fantastic. StackyBenjamins.com/SOFI for more. And where you'll find evidence showing you, outside evidence showing you, that SoFi is the place to go, head to StackyBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney. Because you know what you'll find there? Is that at MagnifyMoney.com, they make it super easy for you to ditch, switch, and save after you compare more places for your savings account, checking account, and those debt products like credit cards, balance transfer loans, things like that. StackyBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney. And in fact, it's cool, because when I pull up Magnify Money, what I find is they're constantly adding to all of the stuff that's on the site. Private student loans, small business loans, auto loans, Parent Plus loan refinance, student loan refinance, personal loans, checking accounts, savings accounts, linked checking and savings accounts, CDs, low interest credit cards, 0% interest credit cards, cashback rewards, balance transfers, secured credit cards. It's all there. StackyBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney. And of course, by the way, back to SoFi, not only is SoFi the top of their student loan refinance offer, but they also at SoFi give you $100 if you use our link to refinance your student loans. Looking at Magnify Money right now, SoFi gets a grade of A+ for their fine print, meaning there isn't much. Maximum term is 20 years. Fixed APR somewhere between 3.38, 6.74. You write to them to find out what interest rate they'll offer you. 2.35 to 6.27 variable, and there is no max. They will decide when they look at your credit worthiness. And what's cool is, by the way, if your FICO score isn't what you think it should be, they don't use the FICO score. They have their own proprietary way of looking at your credit. StackyBenjamins.com/SOFI. Tell you what, getting your house in order with your student loans and your personal debt is a great way to start your weekend. But here's another great way to start your weekend, which is with the next clue to our Little Friday game. And of course, you'll want to go back and listen to the last two shows to get caught up on those. And as I said before, can you get it now? Maybe. Maybe there's enough information with today's clue for you to get it now. It's joe@stackybenjamins.com if you get it. So here we go. I really doubt that this is going to be the clue that puts people over the top. The next one probably will put people over the top, but I don't think this one. Here we go. What do octopus hearts and primary colors have in common? Octopus hearts and primary colors. What do they have in common? That is clue number three. Add that to the first clues that we had, and maybe you're on your way to winning our little January game. joe@stackybenjamins.com if you've got it. Still don't think that's enough info, but we'll see. You guys always amaze me. All right, coming up next week, a fantastic week of shows. You know, a lot of people, like me included, suffer from fear when it comes to anything that we haven't done before or that we're not comfortable with. Even if people tell us that, hey, you're really going to love it, I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I'll love it. And I know I come naturally by that. Lots of people in my family suffer from fear of the unknown. Justin Stenstrom is one of those guys. He has Elite Man Magazine, the Elite Man Podcast. He's got a segment that's not just for men, though. It's men and women. And it's how he deals with fear. And he actually was sent to a doctor, was put on medication. And for him, found a better way. And certainly medication is something that some people need. And we'll even talk about that just a little bit. For Justin, for him, he had to tackle it himself. And so Justin's got a great story on Monday. On Wednesday, Tracy Phobes coming down to the basement. She's interviewed Queen Latifah. She has over 600,000 people like her Facebook page. This woman is a dynamo. She knows everything about saving money at the grocery store. Our Friday FreshBooks FinTech segment, Sum 180, a financial planning tool that is set up to talk about fear. A lot of fear of people that, you know, meeting with financial advisors. So this kind of lets people dip their foot in the water without having to face off one-on-one with a pro. So lots of good stuff next week. A fun roundtable. We'll see everybody next week. Stackamore Benjamins. See you Monday. Bye-bye.
This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC. The show is created by Joe Saul Sehi, produced by Richie Rutter Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. Special thanks to Jamie Gottlieb from Rohde for joining us today. You'll find a link to Rohde at our show notes page at stackingbenjamins.com. Paula Pant appears courtesy of affordanything.com. Len Penzo appears courtesy of the cryptically named lenpenzo.com. Special thanks to Greg McFarlane for unwittingly being the guy everybody loves to hate. He's kind of like our version of George Costanza. The part of Joe's mom's neighbor Doug is played by... Well, if you haven't figured that out by now, you're just not paying attention. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor.
What do you suppose they call that? A novelty act?
I don't know, but it wasn't too bad.
Well, that's a novelty.
Girlfriend,
how you doing? Hey, thank you so much for the Christmas gift. I meant to email you to say thanks, but I'm a crappy friend, so I didn't.
You are a crappy friend.
Wait a minute, you gave Paula a Christmas gift and not me?
Oh, hers was way better than yours.
Yeah, he sent me a summons.
He did? Wow.
Yes, that's right.
Yes, thank you, Joe. That was awesome.
I hope you guys have had fun playing with those.
Go ahead, Len.
Yeah, I'm playing with it all right. You'll see, Joe. You'll see.
I saw at CDS that Alexa won, or CES, a headline yesterday said Alexa won CES. Like, they signed, Amazon signed so many deals at CES for Alexa to be included in, like, everything from cars to whatever. So,
yeah, Siri's not happy about that.
No, apparently not.
No, especially my Siri.
Why? Because you don't talk to her anymore?
She's not happy, Joe.
Hard keeping two electronic women happy, huh?
Oh, you'll see.
Where the heck is Greg? I think Greg must be mad at me.
Why is me being here funny?
I was telling him how you sent me an email about the Senate hearings. Going on for Secretary of State.
First of all, can you it's impossible to ask this without sounding like a jerk, but is the surf overwhelming or do I need to close the door?
Oh no, it's fantastic. No, leave it. I like it in the background anyway.
How was Vietnam?
If we can, you know what? I absolutely loved it. It was fantastic. Thanks. Saigon, I will never go back to. Have you been there?
No, I have not.
Yeah, Saigon, it just is dirty and I don't know. It just, not that great. Hanoi was amazing. Hoi An was great. Laos was my favorite. And Cambodia, while Angkor Wat was just, you know, breathtaking, the Siem Reap, the town that is right next to it, felt like I was in, you know, it just felt like Myrtle Beach or Pigeon Forge, you know, where you've got this beautiful thing right next door, like either the ocean or the national park, and you've built up all this crappy stuff right next to it. So, yeah. So Cambodia was all right. I ate snake. That was good.
Raise your hand, everybody here who's eaten snake.
I have.
I have not.
I've had rattlesnake. I don't know what type of. You probably had a cobra or something, Joe.
I have no idea. No, I had a snake wine that looked like it was from a python.
Okay. So you didn't ask the obvious question. How did the snake taste? What did it taste like to you?
You know, it tasted, I had very little of it because I really didn't want to, I was eating it because it was kind of a dare. I'm in Cambodia at this thing and they're like, hey, here's a tarantula, eat part of this tarantula.
So, hey, rattlesnake tastes just like chicken, bony, bony, bony chicken.
It kind of did. Yep. Yeah. It wasn't great, but anyway. Greg, how was your holiday?
Wonderful. Thank you. Now I want to know what's the most exotic thing Paul has ever eaten.
Well, Will is basically a vegan, so I'm not big into exotic meats. Like, at our house, exotic meat is chicken.
Oh!
But I would say in terms of, the direct answer to your question is the butt of a certain type of ant that is loaded in vitamin C. It's found in Australia. It's like found in the outback, and it's the way that what's the word for the indigenous, the Aboriginal people? It's the way that they would get vitamin C when they were just like in the middle of the desert. There are these particular ants, and you pick them up off the ground, which is how I ate them. I just found them. They weren't served to me anywhere. So you pick them up off the ground, and then you squeeze them with your thumbnail, and it bisects the ant. And then you just pop the butt into your mouth, and it's like, it tastes like a Jolly Rancher. It's like really citrusy.
Oh, was this a sorority initiation?
No, it's that my willingness to eat... Okay, granted, I realize this is not logically sensible whatsoever because I eat beef and chicken and pork, but my willingness to eat any other animal very much depends on how much pain I think it feels, like its level of suffering. So something larger like a snake or a frog or a kangaroo, I don't know, I just imagine it's suffering, whereas something smaller like an ant or a tarantula or crickets, like I'm much more okay with eating insects. Plus, from an environmental perspective, I mean, it makes a lot more sense to harvest your protein from lower on the food chain.
How big are these ants that they need to be bisected as opposed to just popping them in your mouth?
That's some baby got back right there. We should be recording this.
I was about to say, Joe, I really hope you're recording this.
You tell you this a million times. Joe, you should hit that record button from the moment we all log in.
Joe, don't worry. I've been recording it.
Oh, good. Fantastic.
The ants are not very big. I could have eaten the entirety of the ant, but... It just, you know, the juicy part is really the ant butt. And so that's the part that you want to get. Like, you know, while the other part is edible, why would you eat it if you didn't have to?
It's a good thing they don't have stingers, huh? That would suck.
Yeah, don't misidentify. Species misidentification could be very painful there.
Come back looking like you had a big Botox injection on your lips there.
But to say, when you were saying the butt's the juicy part, I'm like, let's talk that way about girls he dated in college.
I cannot lie.
Oh, man. All right. You guys ready to do this thing?